Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 253. My name is John. Joining me today is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hello. Good. It's morning. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning. Good summer vacation. We're on summer break right now. Ryan, the last time we recorded an episode, I believe that would have been Blockade Runner podcast episode 253. I was talking a big game about how we'd be recording a little more frequently because it's summertime, and it's been like a good couple of weeks since our last episode. So
did you say that?
I did say that, yeah.
Why?
I was like, oh yeah, we should be able to get back on like a regular schedule now, and you know, it didn't happen, but we're back today. We'll see what happens from here. I have a couple trips coming up, though. We'll see. I have a trip coming up, so we'll get another episode in before that, and then come back in July. Hey, Ryan, let's talk about some stuff today related to Star Wars. There's been so much that has happened, I think, since the last time we recorded, but the two things we want to cover today for sure are discussing the new Star Wars Outlaws game that was released, or not released, but was previewed and kind of
revealed.
Revealed, that's the word I'm looking for, revealed.
World premiere.
Yeah. What do we call the Jeff Keighley show now, or the Jeff Keighley...
Summer Games Fest.
Isn't there like a fun pun with like his name and E3, though? Like Key 3 or Keighley, I don't know. Try some stuff like that. Anyway, the last few days there's been a lot of video game announcements and reveals and events going on. In kind of place of E3, RIP. And part of that was the Ubisoft showcase, which you watched yesterday, Ryan, so you can tell us all about that. Star Wars Outlaws was revealed as part of that. So we're going to talk about that in just a second here. But we're also going to discuss, finally, the final three episodes of Star Wars Visions Volume 2, which came out a month and a half ago now, but we're gonna get to those and talk about the last three episodes of Visions Volume 2. It's been a bunch of other stuff that's happened as well, which that we're not going to talk about. Like there was a whole like resort that was closed, you know, or is going to be closed in Orlando, and I don't know. There's been a lot of stuff going on in Star Wars that that we're not going to talk about, but we're gonna focus today on just Star Wars Outlaws and Star Wars Vision. So let's kick it off by talking Star Wars Outlaws. Ryan, when it comes to AAA video games, when it comes to Ubisoft, this is really an area that's a passion of yours. So I'm going to let you kind of lead by telling us a little bit about Star Wars Outlaws. Like, give us the overview. Fill me in. I've watched some videos. I know a little bit, but I feel like you know a lot more. So tell us about Star Wars Outlaws, recently revealed by Ubisoft.
Yeah, sure. So this was originally, we've known about this game in some capacity. We've known that Ubisoft was going to make a Star Wars game. We knew that Massive, the internal studio within Ubisoft who made the Tom Clancy Division games would be developing this, and I believe we knew it was open world. So, in a way, none of this is a surprise, but it was still very surprising when this game showed up. I believe, it was at the Xbox showcase event that they showed the first like CG teaser kind of thing for it, and it was, I mean, that was the, oh hey, this game is real, this game is happening. And then yesterday during the Ubisoft event, they showed a straight like 10 minutes of uninterrupted gameplay, which showed that the game appears to be pretty far along. It is scheduled to release next year, and it is incredibly big and ambitious. And very polished is the impression that I got from that 10-minute gameplay showcase. So the kind of conceit of Star Wars Outlaws is you're playing as a new character named Kay Vess. She is a scoundrel, which is like a, you know, kind of the Star Wars class for characters like Lando and Han Solo, who, you know, just, you know, are running missions, you know, kind of skirting the law, you know, kind of that gray area of Star Wars.
Getting out of difficult situations by the seat of their pants, you know, like just sort of like struggling to survive. Yeah.
I would say like Dr. Aphra falls into this. So it is like a Star Wars archetype. It is a Star Wars class. But we've had scoundrels in like the MMOs. I think they were, that was like an actual class in the Old Republic. I'm not sure if in Galaxies Scoundrel was a class. I don't remember. But yeah.
And certainly we've played other video games, at least one notable video game where you stars a scoundrel, where you play as a scoundrel, right?
That's a rude way to talk about Cal Kestis. Jeez.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about Dash Rendar. He of his shoulder pads and a starring role in Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
He's a scoundrel for sure. I mean, he's a Han Solo clone. You know what I mean? He's bootleg Han Solo.
Yeah. So this is definitely a throwback to Shadows of the Empire.
Well, I looked at some tweets, you know, because I saw this game pop up on Twitter. I think you sent me the link, and one of the first comments I saw on one of the announcement tweets was like, cool, like finally a game where we're not playing as a Jedi of some kind or whatever, you know, like, so I think, you know, I saw some, actually here it is on the YouTube video from The Professional, finally a game where you don't play as a Jedi or a soldier. I hope this has a lot of crime theme to it with bounty hunters, mercenaries, the Hutts, and the Spice Cartel, which I believe The Professional, when he says the Spice Cartel, he would be referring to, oh my God, I was going to correct him, and now the species left my mind, from Solo and the Clone Wars. The
Pikes.
Spice
trade. Run by the Pikes.
Yeah, because we did see the Pikes in the reveal trailer, I think, if not the walkthrough, but definitely in the reveal trailer.
Yeah. So, a few other kind of like throwbacky things to this is very extremely intentional references to the canned Star Wars game 1313. We had originally seen, like, when that game was revealed, there was like this like small clip of like a character walking slowly through like a town, and like that almost that exact shot is in the trailer that comes at the end of the gameplay showcase. So, you know, that was a game that people were excited for, like the idea of playing as you know, playing in the Star Wars underworld. So that's, you know, there's definitely like a nod to that, and that's what this game is. Also it takes place between Empire and Jedi, so it's OT stuff. But I think from the first planet that was shown in the gameplay segment was not one I was familiar with. I don't remember what it was called, but...
Oh, did they say a name in the...
They did, because there's, like, something that, like, pops up when she gets into the town, and it, like... Yeah, but I don't know.
Okay, well... Yeah. Well, we'll see about that. We made it, Nyx. I'm trying to see. She's making it into the town right now as I'm watching. Mm-hmm. And she just went through a gate, and there's a sign there. Oh, Jaunta's Hope, Toshara. Toshara. Is that Toshara. The name of the planet?
Yeah.
Toshara. Okay. Yeah.
And on the website for the game, it says explore distinct planets, plural, with bustling cities and cantinas before racing across sprawling outdoor landscapes on your speeder. Each planet brings new adventures, unique challenges, and enticing rewards if you're willing to take the risk.
Hey. Yeah, interesting. So that was one of the first things that comments that you had made to us the other day, Ryan, when this was announced, was like open world. Does that mean one open world? Does it mean multiple open worlds? So I guess that's kind of been answered there by the text on the website and sort of at least strongly hinted at in the gameplay walkthrough video as well, mm-hmm. that there'd be more than one planet. So yeah, that's exciting. I mean, I think it would be cool, or I would be fine with playing a Star Wars game like this that was just like set on one planet, mm-hmm. and you know, but provided the opportunity for a lot of exploration on that one planet, I think that would be fine. But if we're talking Star Wars, I think it does make more sense, obviously, if possible, to allow travel between planets, right? Because like different biomes and just space travel, that's a big part of Star Wars, right? So that makes sense to have a few planets, I guess. I don't know how many planets you can realistically include in a game where it's like open world or whatever. But yeah, an interesting challenge, I suppose, to kind of combine open world gameplay, which is, you know, all the rage these days, and Star Wars with its many planets and locations.
Yeah, so I mean, what I'm kind of expecting here is the, you know, kind of the approach that Star Wars takes to multiple planets. Like, you never like spend time like exploring like all the different continents on a planet in Star Wars. Like, you go to the cool areas and you spend time in those areas, and then you kind of like move on to the next biome, and so I assume it's going to be like an approach but similar to that, but it will be larger areas than something like, you know, Jedi Survivor.
Well, so yeah, because that's what's interesting when you say, or not when you say, but when Ubisoft says, when Yves Guillemot says that this is an open world game, the first ever open world Star Wars game. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what does that mean exactly? You know, and I know that it's a defined thing within the world of video games, open world, you know, gameplay or whatever, but it's an interesting thought, because generally speaking, you know, it's like one massive world and you can go off in any mm-hmm. direction and explore, and you feel like it's this really large interconnected place, but then like what you just described does sound a little bit more like, say, Jedi Fallen Order, which I mean, those are pretty small places, but mm-hmm. you know, like, I guess at what point do you say, oh, well, it is open world versus it's not open world, in terms of like, how big does that area have to be, you know? Because most 3D, I guess, action games or whatever, you're going to have some level or some amount of space and that you can explore at will, mm-hmm. right? They're not side-scrolling games where you're like on rails and you have to go from point A to point B. So it's just, I'm curious to see and looking forward to seeing, you know, sort of how open, how big, how explorable each of these worlds will end up being.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's actually talk through some of the gameplay styles in this, because I think this was like a really good vertical slice of the game. I have to admit, when it first started out, there was like this, it's a very like scripted seeming stealth segment that felt like a, you know, Xbox 360, PS3 era game for a second there, and that kind of deflated my excitement right at the start there, because I was like, wow, this is really, really scripted and really kind of just a benign style of gameplay. But then it gets better from there.
You're taking the words right out of my mouth because I saw like all the stealth stuff there in the beginning and I was like, that's not, I mean, it's not that I think stealth games are bad, or I don't even have very much experience with stealth games, you know, but it just didn't appeal to me a ton. Like, oh boy, you know, like if I'm going to be sneaking around all over the place in this game, like that doesn't sound that exciting to me. But as we're about to discuss, there's a variety of different gameplay styles in this like opening, or in this, this little walkthrough. So it did not give the impression that you'll be just doing hours and hours of stealth gameplay, you know, as you play this game.
And it also, like, it was one of those things where the stealth immediately proved to be just a choice you could make or not make, because then she's, like, immediately into, like, this big shootout. And so, like, you know, there's a type of stealth game where you're sneaking and you get caught and then it's like, oh, game over, basically, like the stealth sections in like Spider-Man on PS4, PS5, like when you're playing as like Mary Jane or Miles in those sections, like you get caught and it's like, oh, you need to restart from the checkpoint. And then this was like a stealth section where she got caught and then it's like, oh, that sucks. And then she just like blows everyone away with a blaster. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like, you really didn't need to be sneaking around there. Like you could have just been like shooting dudes like at the beginning. But I think what they were doing was showing like, hey, that's an option if you want to play it like that. And that's where like, that's where I kind of had like the sigh of relief, where it's like, okay, well, this is like incidental. Like you can just play this however you want, which is, I think, the right approach to like an open world game, because you don't want to. It's weird when you have like a ton of choice, but then like not in certain segments, which is kind of why those Spider-Man segments always felt really weird to me in that game. But so then,
yeah, and the Spider-Man game, like, it's a good example of a very popular open world game, right? And and it's kind of maybe a good analog for this game, because you just have New York City, right? That's your world. You have New York City, and you can swing from one, you know, end of the portion of New York City that they've carved out for that game to the other, but it does feel open world, right? I mean,
yeah,
it would be called an open world game because you can go anywhere you want at any time, like within that, you know, that city. And so you could definitely do the same thing with like a Star Wars game, right? Like you have a section of this planet, like you described earlier, and you can go wherever you want within that section of the planet, but that would be, you know, granted, you have the Atlantic Ocean, I guess, that works pretty well as a barrier in New York City. Like, well, you can't go any further there. So it'll be interesting to see. But I guess you can just create the ocean of whatever planet you're on, or, you know, whatever barriers to kind of make it fence it in a little bit.
Yeah.
While still being open world.
Because, like, in Spider-Man, like, you can go to Midtown, but you can't go to Jersey. Like there, and I think like no one playing Spider-Man is like, why can't I go to Delaware? Like you said, this was an open world game. Why can't I just keep going down the coast here?
Like, yeah, but you also can't go. You can't go to Queens or Staten Island or the Bronx either. No, you know what I mean? Like you really can't
in Spider-Man 2. That's a big.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're opening up the boroughs.
Okay.
Looks pretty cool. But yeah, but like there's these like understood limits. Like even in a like a Grand Theft Auto game, like you're in this like city and it's like super open, but you know, like you can't just like go across the country. Like you can go to like different parts of the city and stuff. But and that's what it will probably be like. It'll probably feel like cities with like some like outskirts areas across the different planets.
Yeah, it's just funny because I kind of feel like that's what Jedi Survivor feels like, or Jedi Fallen Order feels like, too. So, like, what makes this open world where that one's not, you know? I guess that game tries to incorporate...
pretty limited. Like, even the open spaces are pretty limited.
Yeah. Well, it also incorporates, you know, upgradable powers that allow you to get to places you couldn't get to before and stuff, which, not that that's not, I guess what I'm trying to say, Jedi Fallen Order, I haven't played that much Jedi Survivor, unfortunately, but Jedi Fallen Order tried to incorporate a kind of a Metroid-esque model too, where like you do part of a planet, you go somewhere else, you could come back there when you have more powers and then you could explore more of it, you know, which is a little bit different, I guess, too.
Yeah. So from here, let's see, I believe she gets on her speeder bike after like escaping after the shootout. And so this is like the part where I would say this is where it like hugely differs from something like the Jedi games, is like she's speeding through like long stretches of planets, and there's like things in every direction that, like, you know, this is obviously like a gameplay slice where they want to get you to the next part, but like you could technically just start veering off into different directions and like exploring other places here.
So yeah, because I'm really interested in learning more about that, or just kind of experiencing what this ends up being like when the game comes out. Because one thing I thought this, just, you know, broad strokes, I thought that this gameplay walkthrough was extremely effective in that it demonstrated multiple examples of gameplay, right? And I know that I can do all these different things, and like, you know, spoilers, at the end of this video, when she hops in a ship and flies off planet, it's like, Okay, this is open as hell, right? I mean, and like, I'm traveling through one segment. It felt like a Star Wars movie in the sense that like there's some chase scene, you know, Force Awakens, right? Like, we got to get off Jakku, right? So we have the battle, and then we're getting chased by TIE fighters. Then we jump into the Millennium Falcon. We get chased by TIE fighters. We get the Millennium Falcon up into, you know, space, whatever, right? Like, it's this whole sequence and segment. And this felt so cinematic and like a Star Wars film in that regard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting you say that, like, as she's on the speeder and she's being chased, like, it's like, oh, there's all this different stuff you could go and do. I'm sure that's true, and that's really cool. But also, I felt like, I felt a little bit like watching this video, it was so scripted in terms of, like, I'm in a sequence, like, in a sequence from a movie, and she's talking the whole time. And, like, I didn't really feel like you could hop off your speeder there. It felt like you were locked into a cinematic sequence in which you're being chased by, you know, the enemies, and you've got to get from point A to point B. And so I think that's just probably because this is like a major story sequence within the game, and not reflective of like what a lot of the gameplay will be like, you know, because it can't be an open world game and be this like this story driven. Otherwise, like those are opposing ideas. You know what I mean? That wouldn't really work. But obviously within that open world, you can have these story focused sequences. So that's not a complaint, but it's just like an observation that like this really can't be like what a lot of the gameplay is like, because I don't know. That's my opinion. What do you think about that?
Well, so if you watch that segment, that so she's being chased out of the Pike Place and Pike Place Market in Seattle. she's being chased out of there. And then after like 30 seconds, there's an objective pop up that says like get to safety, and it like checks it off. And then from that point on, then there's like a marker, like a destination marker that's like, hey, you should go meet up with this person. And in this segment, she does. But like what that tells me is that like as soon as it's like that get to safety part is done, like from there, like you can go to the marker and go talk to the person to progress the story. But like that particular mission is over, and now you have that like intermittent freedom to like go do whatever. And like obviously for the demo, they choose to just follow that objective, but the mission is over, and she could technically go anywhere at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah, I'm watching it again. I see what you mean. Because in the first part of that, she's being chased and it's like really intense. But once she takes care of the couple of speeders that are chasing her, I guess you're right. At that point, she could just hop off the bike and do other things, right? Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't have to go into... Okay, good point.
Yeah. So like, Yeah, and that's, and then she gets to the town, the city. It's like it's a really like dense location. You know, it's there's a lot happening, a lot of NPCs going about their business, a lot of detail in the environment, which is just like one of those things that it's like, wow, this is really impressive. And then you get to the location, and here it becomes like a very like traditional kind of AAA game where you're you know, you go and you talk to the NPC that you needed to talk to, and then you're like in this story segment, which we are watching right now because you have the video pulled up like a goddamn professional here. And
a goddamn professional would have thought of this like 15 minutes ago rather than like you're describing. Oh, well, there's the part where she's on the bike and then she could get out, got off. There's an objective thing that pops up. I could have had that going the whole time.
You could have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fix it in post. So
I'm thinking about that. Yeah, I probably will.
So then you're like talking to the characters and, you know, everything like looks really good here. Just like super high quality models, super expressive. Also just in general, KVS's design is awesome. Like she just like instantly has like a good Star Wars character look to her, and her friend, her little creature, super cute, super good. I like
the space dog. What I'd like to say about her hairstyle, let's see if I'll pause it when it cuts back to her. What I'd like to say about her hairstyle is that I really like it because I think it's like 80s working class single mom, man of the people, woman of the people type hairstyle. You know what I mean? I think she stepped right out of like, you know, she's like a, you know, the movie Overboard, Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn, you know, like one of their friends that they're hanging out with at the bowling alley, like that kind of haircut, or just like, yeah, I don't know. She's just really like, very working class, very 80s, great little haircut there. I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on hair myself, you know, but like, it really speaks to me. I just feel like that's very much what her look is.
Yeah. Good hair, good outfit. I mean, obviously the outfit is like a little bit, reminiscent of like Han or, Dash Rendar minus, the extra shoulder pads, but, yeah, no, it's a really good look. Like, I think they did a really nice job with the character design.
Well, you know, I think she looks like a real person. I don't think Dash Rendar looks like a real person. Dash Rendar has a different kind of charm, you know what I mean? And I don't just mean because, you know, he was being realized in 64 bits of silicone graphic technology or whatever. I mean, like, the design of him is so 90s and so, like, you know, over the top, whereas like her look, you know, I chose to focus on the hairstyle, but like her clothes and just her look and appearance and everything feels way more grounded and down to earth, like almost like a retro, like it does look like 70s or 80s, like very kind of like a more grounded presentation, you know? And so I think that's cool. That works a lot. And like, even if you think about Han Solo's haircut in, you know, Star Wars, right? It's like this feathered, like parted down the middle kind of, I don't know. It's very like 70s, 80s kind of haircut, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And it's not like flashy. It communicates like a working class kind of thing. And I feel like that's what she's got going on here too. So, you know, it's joking a little bit, but actually I do think the design really works on that level and is pretty cool.
Yeah. So then in this segment, we're given like the first introduction of the choice system, which is just another kind of like layer onto this game. And, you know, I think like choice in games is, you know, it can be a controversial thing where it's like, okay, well, how much does your choice like actually affect anything? And, you know, I think there's, choices in some games that have like huge ramifications, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic or something, and then choices in other games where it's like, oh, that's nice, you gave me a choice, but you know, I'm still gonna kind of end up doing roughly the same thing here. And I don't know. I don't know how robust it will be in this game. I don't think it needs to be like KOTOR levels of like, you know, every choice you make is going to dramatically change the experience and you're going to want to replay this game 17 times to get to see all the possible outcomes and everything. Like, I don't think it's going to be that, and I don't think it like needs to be, but it is just kind of like a nice thing to kind of give you a little bit more agency as a player and, you know, kind of connect with this character being like, yeah, this is like your character that you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, because like another thing that kind of comes to mind for me is like, man, there's system upon system upon system in like the brief demo here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it all seems to work really well, but like, yeah, at a certain point it's like a game probably needs to focus on a reasonable number of things and do them well instead of, you know, wanting to have like every single element of modern games in them. But you know, like I don't think the bribe system is, or whatever you call it, the choice system is like a, you know, if it's incorporated in a limited way, like in moments like that, and it's not like a, you know, major focus, I think that's it'll work well, you know, it'll be nice. But like yeah, I guess there's just so much packed into these 10 minutes that you know, that thought did cross my mind at one point, like, man, you can't have everything in one game, you know. Mm-hmm. Or you probably shouldn't have everything in one game.
Right. Yeah. You know, jack of all trades, master of none, kind of thing. Mm. But I think like everything we've seen here is like executed on like a pretty high level of quality. Like, I mean, like I was saying, like the cutscenes, the voice acting and everything was like really good. The cinematic aspects of it. We just watched, on our little video here, the part where she just gets in a ship and takes off into space, does a space battle, and then starts, you know, heading to another planet. And you know, the space battle stuff looked like really good. It looked fun and like really approachable. And I don't know, I guess that's kind of where we leave off here. Then it shows like a few more locations. It shows that Star Wars 1313 shot. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from the combat looks fine. Like the shooting looks fine. It looks like a modern third-person shooter. I'm not, you know, expecting anything like mechanically like insane, like Vanquish or something happening here, which is fine, because like really, like the parts just need to work. All of these different parts, they just need to work to like make a game like this good and enjoyable. Like, you know, I think about something like the last Batman game, Arkham Knight, I think, where they tried to like, you know, make it bigger, add in like all this more stuff, and then there were like these Batmobile sections that play like absolute garbage, and it's like, now you can drive a car, but you're like, well, I was fine just like swinging around as Batman. And they're like, no, you can drive a car, and we're going to make you drive this car, and it sucks. And now you're, like, driving through checkpoints, and you have to do, like, drifting challenges and stuff. And, you know, and I think, like, that's where ambition and, like, adding new things, it's like, well, why even put that in if, it, like, it's not going to be fun? Whereas, like, everything in this game, like, all these kind of disparate parts, which aren't disparate in the scope of Star Wars. Like, they all seem to be, like, pretty high quality. And, I mean, you never know until you actually, like, get your hands on the controller and, like, how it feels. But everything here, like, looked really good. There's almost this feeling of, like, too good to be true to it as of right now. Because, like, I think, like, the visuals were ridiculously impressive. Like, the way that it just kind of, you know, moved through these sections without loading or anything. And it all just, like, naturally flowed. And I think, like, the just the general fidelity was good. It seemed to run really smooth. I couldn't actually tell if it was 30 or 60 frames per second. But also, like, we don't know. Is this demo, like, running on a $4,000 PC with a $2,000, you know, graphics card in it? Is this, you know, running on, like, an Xbox Series X or a PS5 kind of thing? So I think, you know, there's things to be skeptical about. There's also, you know, Ubisoft does have a reputation with their open world games of them, like, starting strong and then becoming, like, incredibly formulaic, and you're just doing, like, the same thing over and over again in, like, different, you know, in different places. And that's why, you know, people talk about, like, yeah, I played 30 hours of the new Assassin's Creed and then I was just done with it forever, instead of, like, actually finishing it, because, you know, people get burnt out on those games really fast.
Yeah.
But to me, like, this seems like a dream game. Like, it's a cool protagonist. You know, I think the timeline setting isn't, you know, the most exciting, but we're going to different locations, we're seeing it from, like, a different perspective. Like, you're not playing as, like, a Jedi or a soldier here. You know, you're playing this, like, open world game as a scoundrel, and, you know, everything that kind of goes with that. Yeah, I think this is, like, a great looking Star Wars world that you just get to hang out in and do Star Wars-y things in Star Wars-y places. I mean, I'm really hoping that everything kind of comes together with this game, and I hope there's no, like, last minute, like, ridiculous controversy or something that comes up and just, like, kills the momentum, like what happened with, like, Battlefront 2 and the microtransactions and all that stuff. Like, I hope there's, like, I hope there's just not, like, a monkey's paw element to this game, or, like, it just gets canceled, or, you know, whatever, whatever else, or it comes out and it, like, runs like crap and is super buggy. Like, you know, all those different things that can happen to a game. Like, I'm trying to you know, not get my hopes up too high, but, you know, after this showcase, I was, like, pretty blown away, and, like, it was kind of one of those things where you're just, like, I just want to be playing this. Like, let me, like, do the things that you were just doing, because I want to try them, I want to experience them. So I am pretty stoked for this game.
Yeah, I think it looks really good. I think it looks very compelling in terms of, like, a new or a different kind of Star Wars game. I'm hopeful it's going to be something that'll be to my taste, or, you know, the kind of, I'm kind of picky about games, you know, I'm pretty picky about games, I guess. So, like, kind of hoping it'll be to my taste. But usually with Star Wars stuff, like, I don't know, like a flight sim or whatever you'd call Star Wars Squadrons is not typically the kind of game that I play, but that one I enjoyed. I never finished it. I would like to go back and finish it at some point.
It's good.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it, even though it's, yeah, I enjoyed it, even though it's not my kind of Star Wars game or kind of game, just because, you know, the Star Wars thing kind of gives me that extra push to kind of get invested in it. And, you know, the same is kind of true of Jedi Fallen Order, which I liked a lot. I don't it's like a little closer to the kind of games, I guess, that I tend to like more often. But anyway,
like Battlefront, you know, again, this as game, well. Like you,
yeah, Battlefront. I played.
You don't play a lot of online first-person shooters, but
no, and that's why I'm awful at Battlefront.
Yeah,
but I did like it. Yeah,
yeah.
I played a fair amount of Battlefront and Battlefront 2, and mm-hmm. And enjoyed both of them. So yeah, so I think, you know, there's a lot here that's pretty intriguing and compelling to me. I'm looking forward to playing it for sure. I'm interested too, like in the open world part of it, sort of what you were just talking about, you know, because right now the reason I haven't played Jedi Survivor is because I am playing Tears of the Kingdom, Legend mm-hmm. of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, and my son Owen, who has his last day of eighth grade today, which is crazy.
Wow.
He's finishing eighth grade today. Yeah. He is almost done with Tears of the Kingdom. He's like kind of stuck a little bit, I guess, on the final boss, but he's almost done with the game. And he's played more hours than I have because he's a child with more time to like play games and stuff. But not that many more hours. And like I can't. I would guess I'm like 15% done with the game. You know, mm-hmm. and he's almost completely done. And the thing is, it's because as I'm playing, I just am constantly like, oh, I want to go do this thing over there. Yeah. Or like almost the thing that I love so much about the game is just walking down a path and, you know, all these things I don't expect to find that pull me in that I want to do, like little, it's not even side, there are side missions in the game, but it's not even that very much. It's more just like, I see a thing over there. I want to engage with that thing or want to go do the thing or whatever. And so the open world element of it is really, 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 really addictive and fun. And like, that's what I love about the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if this Star Wars game has a really cool, like, you know, storyline, like Star Wars, you know, kind of movie backbone to it, but then there's tons of things that are like really engaging and enjoyable to do, and you can kind of just explore and be consistently like interested in exploring that world, that would be a dream game to me. That would be amazing. Mm-hmm. So I think, but that's a big if, right? Because you can definitely populate an open world with stuff that's like really compelling, or you can populate it with like fetch quests and busy work mm-hmm. and stuff that gets super, super repetitive. So, that part's up in the air, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I will remain hopeful that, it'll be, you know, the really engaging and, fun version of open world gameplay that, that it could be.
Yeah, yeah, and I think with what they showed here and just the options presented by the Star Wars universe, you know, because you got when you're playing something like Spider-Man, like you can, you know, go and do like a side mission where you like beat up a lot of thugs, but you don't really like get in a spaceship and go to space, like, and. Here, you know, there is that like extra like Star Wars element, and it's all going to come down to like the design and like what the majority of the gameplay is, or if things are kind of like spread around like evenly, like if you're getting bored just like going around and doing, you know, quest for NPCs on a planet, like can you just go up into space and do some like space things, like or is that like, oh, that's only like 1% of the game time, like you only use that when you're like traveling to from one planet to another, or like I don't know, there's so much that's like unknown here, but you know, I think what they showed yesterday was really, really good, and this was not really a project I was super excited about when it was just like, hey, the Ubisoft and some people who make Tom Clancy games are making a Star Wars game. It's like, oh yay. But then like what they actually showed had so much more like personality and variety than I was expecting, just polish in general, that like, oh yeah, like you're going hard on this. Like this is not just like a, you know, license game that you're kind of like crapping out to like because you have the license.
Yeah.
Which is which is wild because, like, it's been, you know, where we are, like, in this area where there's less Star Wars games, but most of them that are coming out are of, like, a pretty, like, high level of quality and ambition, and, you know, polish and performance. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm right there with you. I still am like, hey, can somebody just make like a small like 2D Star Wars game? Can we just get like a not low budget, but you know what I mean? Like, we get all these massive like AAA, like hugely ambitious Star Wars games. Like, I guess Squadrons was closer to that. Not 2D at all, obviously, but it was like more of a smaller scale, lower budget kind of Star Wars game. But
like, where's like, the man, like, you sent me Shredder's Revenge.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of Star Wars
games. Or you had sent me the Prince of Persia game, also from the Ubisoft event. Yeah. That, I mean, it looks really great, and but it's like obviously on a smaller scale. And I'm just like, every time I see something like that, or the Turtles game or whatever, every time I see something that like that, I'm just like, when will they do this with Star Wars? Like, I mean, I'm excited for these big games, but like I feel like there's there's opportunity because they'll do smaller games on mobile, but that's it. You know, they won't do anything kind of smaller on console so far. So,
and it's weird because like they do that with the shows and like Disney Plus stuff. Like you get, you know, you get your Mandalorians, but you also get Visions and like the Ghibli Grogu short and like it is like, why not do that with, you know, with games?
But. Well, Ryan, that might be an excellent opportunity to transition to the other topic we want to discuss today, which is finishing up our look at the Visions Volume 2 shorts. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about the first six on previous episodes of the show. So today we're going to discuss The Bandits of Golak, The Pit, and Awa Song. I know how to say her name when I'm watching that short, but I can't seem to do it when I'm not hearing another character say it. So that's the protagonist of the final Visions Volume 2 short, spelled AAU' Awa's Song. I think that's it. So anyways, we're going to talk about the three of those. I kind of rewatched them this morning to try to get ready for the podcast because, you know, like we said earlier, it has been quite a while since these released at this point. But yeah, let's jump into it and spend a couple of minutes on each one. The first one is The Bandits of Golak, which is produced by 88 Pictures, an Indian studio, which, you know, that heritage or influence is pretty evident in the short itself, but I love this one. I thought this one was one of the stronger. They're all pretty strong. I really ended up liking basically all of the shorts in Visions Volume 2, but I thought this one really contained most of the elements you want to see in a Star Wars project. You know, like it was just a really great, you know, kind of family-focused sort of story about this brother and sister. It also, you know, had elements of the Force, had elements of, like, imperialism and sort of, you know, the, you know, sort of warning against the dangers of that, as evidenced by the evil empire that's, terrorizing these communities. So, yeah, I just felt like on so many levels, it felt very Star Wars and featured most of the essential elements of Star Wars. But then it also had this very distinct flavor or, you know, kind of cultural elements as a result of it being, you know, written, directed, produced by Indian filmmakers.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has a lot of, you know, things we've seen/come to expect in Star Wars. I think like what stuck out to me initially was that a lot of these projects follow, like, their visual styles are just very different from what we're used to seeing from Lucasfilm animation. I think this one felt the closest to like that Lucasfilm animation house style that you see in you know, Clone Wars, The Bad Batch, the Tales of the Jedi, like that sort of thing. Like this felt like very similar to that. You know, which isn't my favorite, you know, kind of art style of the bunch here. It is, you know, just a little familiar, and you know, it's not my favorite art style in Star Wars in general. So but I think there are enough kind of cultural flourishes here and identity to make it stand out a bit. But some of the other, you know, kind of things that, I noticed that were, you know, conventionally Star Wars is there was, it kind of started with like a Western feel, with A-Train Heist, which is a very, very big thing in the Disney era of Star Wars, or train heist, or train, not heist, but, confrontations, I don't know, train escapes, train whatever, train things.
Well, I'm gonna I agree 100%, but and I have to say I'm not very familiar with Indian literature or Indian, you know, films or anything like that, but like, you know, two examples of Indian influenced you know, works of art or whatever, you know, stories that I'm familiar with. I teach a book called The Namesake, which is written by this author, Jhumpa Lahiri. She's an Indian, I think she's American. She might be Canadian, either Indian American or Indian Canadian author. And, you know, that story, part of it takes place in India. And a big portion of it that takes place in India is revolves around a train and is set on a train. And like a train is a big part of that. And then, you know, this is not an Indian film, but it's very influenced by Indian films. The Darjeeling Limited also, you know, centers on a train traveling, you know, through India. And again, I'm not super knowledgeable about, you know, India and its train, you know, sort of system or whatever, but it feels like that is something that is not so much like how Westerns you know have trains as a trope, but like maybe it's just like very much a very common in India, like the use of trains and like, you know, trains as a because like they're not that ubiquitous in America anymore, you know what I mean? It's not something like most of us don't ride on trains very often, and you know what I mean. So anyway, I think like there's maybe that element of it too, where it's a kind of a marriage of those two things, you know, like the Western influence and the fact that like the train heist storytelling and stuff is very common in Star Wars, but also, it feels like to my uneducated, you know, kind of self that, trains are maybe a little more common, a common element of like Indian, you know, influenced or Indian, stories, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in, like, most metropolitan areas, like, you know, I mean, we do have, like, trains, you know, in, like, you know, subway systems in New York and stuff, but in, like, most major cities, like, buses and trains, public transportation is, you know, big.
Yeah, but like in Japan, for instance, if you were going to travel from one part of the country to the other, it would be very common to jump on a train and travel like from one place to another, and we don't do that here.
Right. You know,
we might take a train like a couple miles from one part of a city to another, but we don't take trains like across the country anymore, really. My family just did, and they had an awful experience, which was interesting, but
oh, really?
Like some of my extended family. Yeah, they took a train from San Francisco to Chicago, and we're hoping it was going to be this wonderful thing, and like the train kept breaking down, and they ran out of food, and there was no air conditioning, and like it was like, it was awful the whole time. So we need to update our train system in America, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, what else about this one? again, I think we're seeing that reoccurring theme throughout these shorts, which I don't know if this was an intentional mandate or just something that was like coincidental, but that theme of like leaving the familiar and being destined for bigger things. You know, that's come up a few times already. It's going to come up again as we're talking about these episodes. And it is just kind of like an interesting thread that's, you know, being woven through these. And I don't know if it's like, you know, just some like a natural conclusion that people came to when making their Star Wars Visions episodes, or if it was like, hey, we want this, you know, theme to be kind of a part of this series. But it is really interesting that it is a theme that keeps reoccurring here.
I kind of missed the end of your last point there because my headphones died.
Oh, bummer. No, I was just saying that I don't know if this was like a mandate or a suggestion from Lucasfilm, or if it was just something that like natural and coincidentally reoccurred throughout these shorts. But it is interesting how many of them have this like theme of like leaving the familiar, being destined for bigger things, making challenging choices about your future.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too as I was rewatching some of these today. I was thinking about that, and then like there's another kind of thing that keeps popping up is like, you know, following your light or following your, you know, the sort of like many of these characters have something within them that's like kind of pulling them in the direction, you know, the Force or like Force sensitivity or whatever it is. But like in the pit with the Kyber crystals, which we'll talk about in a second, many of these episodes, it's like there's kind of similar elements like that. And I was thinking to myself, like, again, like you were just, you know, kind of asking too, is this like a mandate? Is this like the intentional direction of, you know, Visions Volume 2? Probably is. But also it's just like, man, if you were a creator who loves Star Wars and you were like, you get 15 or 20 minutes to tell a Star Wars story, I feel like it's very likely that a lot of these things would be popping up anyways, you know? So, I'm curious about that, but you're right, between Screecher's Reach and Awa's Song and this Bandits of Golak and probably other ones too. You know, it is definitely a reoccurring idea there, right? Like the call to adventure and the being faced with the difficult decision to kind of leave the past behind and go off and realize your potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought the relationship between Charuk and Rani was the Force-sensitive younger sister and Charuk the older brother. I thought it was very touching, very sweet, very well realized. And you know, like as you're watching this short, I think, you know, it's becoming more clear that that Rani's power is something that's really dangerous, and that, you know, that Charuk knows that he knows what their journey that they're on is, what their destination is, and that she doesn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously by the end of the episode, it becomes clear, like, you know, that he is delivering her to a Jedi, you know, character. Yeah, those final moments in which, you know, that that the Jedi master, I don't know what you would call that character, I guess her name is Rugal, but in those final moments when she parts the water and there's that secret, you know, doorway to the path below, and they have to, you know, kind of separate or whatever. It's just very, very touching at that moment. And I thought it was really great writing and very smart and very clever and very effective and touching how they had this whole like bandits game. Like, oh, we play this bandits game, you know, that older brother played with the little sister. And then when it was time for her to kind of leave him behind and go off and become a Jedi or whatever, you know, she's hesitant to do so. And he brings back the bandit thing, you know, and brings up like, well, every bandit has to, you know, I don't know, whatever. And then she says, you know, we're going to steal all the sweets in the galaxy or something, you know, or, you know, anyway, they tied it all together with that whole, that bandit story. And I thought that was really, really touching. And then of course, you know, as she's gone, as she's going to leave, like he has her hand clasped in his. And when she opens it up, there's like a, another one of those like lollipops in there, you know? So as a way of comforting her when she has to make this difficult decision, I thought that was very touching. And then of course, after she goes down into the water, you see the water bubbling, and then she has like given him that flute, you know?
Yeah.
So they've each given, you know, each other something to kind of hold on to, and maintain the connection between them. So yeah, it's really beautiful, but also it had a great like Star Wars, like lightsaber Jedi versus Inquisitor fight battle in there too. So, that was all really cool. And I loved seeing the Inquisitor, you know, villain, be someone who, I don't know how you put it, but like the character design was, you know, also very influenced by, you know, Indian culture, and not just like another guy in a mask or a helmet or whatever, you
right.
know. So
yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so, it was a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. I've watched this one a couple times, and it's among my favorites from Volume 2, but I think I've said that about a number of these episodes. All right, the next one is called The Pit. The Pit is the only Japanese produced short in this. Yeah, it's the only Japanese.
Sort of.
Sort of?
Yeah. So the studio, they are in, like, I believe the studio was started by an American. In Japan. So it's kind of like a mix of Western and Japanese staff, from what I could tell. And they've done some full things on their own, but they've also been primarily, it seemed, a support studio for particularly Japanese animation studios, but also some Western stuff as well. So like some of the things they've worked on is like the Netflix Castlevania, then like very specifically Japanese things like One Piece and Attack on Titan and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So yeah, they're an interesting company.
Actually, now that you bring that up, I'm looking at the writer and director, and this is ringing a bell because I think I watched something behind the scenes on this, but again, it's been a few weeks now. But the co-directors are Leandre Thomas and Justin Ridge. Justin Ridge, Star Wars fans will know, because he's been involved in definitely Star Wars Resistance. I think he may have been the lead producer on Star Wars Resistance. And also Bad Batch, I'm pretty sure, and probably came from the Clone Wars also, or Rebels. Anyway, he's been involved with the Star Wars animation world for a while now. So yeah, those are, probably not, well, I know Justin Ridge is not a Japanese creator, and I don't think Leandre Thomas is either. So I see what you mean. Not a full on Japanese, production, but. Mm-hmm.
But it has a very like anime style to it.
Yes, 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 yes. And you say the studio is in Japan, so obviously some Japanese talent working there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Yeah. This one. How do you put it? Like very, very, very much about like class and imperialism and you know the. God, what's the verb I'm looking for? I want to say manipulation, but it's not that. It's,
oppression.
Yeah. Oppression. Yeah. Of these people by the Empire, and, the Empire is cruel as hell in this, this short. So
yeah, it is brutal. I think this is probably the most, well, I don't know, like this and Screecher's Reach are, I would say, like the most brutal of the of the shorts,
kind of the darkest, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a whole group of enslaved people working at the, you know, bottom of a well, or a bottom of a mine, I guess. And they've mined their way through this planet, you know, digging out kyber crystals, which are then being used to create a, you know, a city, that, people are living in luxury in, or at least in luxury in comparison to how these people are living, right? But yeah, that they're doing this mining for the empire, being forced to do it, and when they are, you know, when the empire is satisfied that they've mined all the Kyber they can from there, they just leave them in this pit and take off, and are just leaving them there to starve to death, which is pretty dark. That's pretty brutal, as you say.
Yeah, and it gets darker because, like, what can you do when you're in your, like, it's almost like a horror movie concept, yeah, in a way, where it's like you are just left in a pit, and yeah, like what do you do,
right?
And so then,
yeah, my mind went there too, because like it doesn't actually go down that path very far, but my, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, like, this is going to get really nasty really quickly.
Yeah.
When all these people are stuck down there like that.
Yeah. And so then you finally have like a character who's like, I'm climbing out of this. And this is also extremely horror movie, where the person like gets out of the like proverbial house or whatever. And like he climbs up, and it's like this very, like, video gamey segment where you can like see the handheld, like the handholds, as he's like climbing up. But it is like tense, because you're like, if dude falls, like that's gonna be brutal. And you know, he finally gets up, and out of there, and is like, then like gets into town, and you're like, oh man, there's like that sense of relief. And he gets into town, and he's like, hey, there's a bunch of people trapped in this pit. Like, we need help. And like, he's just like ignored there, which is that like kind of like horror movie trope that comes in, you know, like, a, you know, 3/4 of the way through, where you're like, oh, they got their way out, and like, you know, they're talking to the police, and the police are going to come in and, you know, fix this. And then like, then like the police just drive on, and you're like, wait, no. And it was kind of like that vibe. And then he gets caught by stormtroopers, and this is like the most brutal part of, like, I don't know, it's like one of the most brutal Star Wars things, I think, where he's caught by stormtroopers. They take him back to the pit and then throw him down.
Yeah.
Like, wild.
Yeah, yeah, just toss him back into the pit. Now, obviously, and that's kind of the darkest moment of the short, because it does kind of, you know, become a little more hopeful, or much more hopeful from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's another brother-sister story, right? I think it's a sister, I don't know. If not, it mirrors that kind of relationship. But, you know, he had told his sister before he left, like, follow the light. And, you know, she remembers that, and then convinces everybody down there in the pit to chant that phrase, follow the light. And they do so for what seems like a really long time, and long enough and loud enough that the people in that city hear them, and the people in that city, you know, follow their voices out to the pit, and then, you know, end up helping them out. And one thing I thought was really effective as well in this short was that sequence where they're on their way to the pit, and the stormtroopers are trying to stop them. You know, the stormtroopers are like, stand down, you got to stop. Like, you know, it really felt like a protest or a riot, in which you have, like, you know, police in riot gear or whatever, right? But to quote our favorite Star Wars movie here on the Blockade Runner podcast, The Rise of Skywalker, there's more of us, Poe, there's more of us, you know, like, at a certain point, like, the power to the people, they push through that. And I love that the episode even makes the choice to have, you know, like, one stormtrooper talking to his, you know, commanding officer or whatever, being like, what do we do? And the guy's just like, we leave, we take off, we gotta just let's get out of here, you know.
Yeah.
But basically, like, the power of the people, and their empathy the Empire's no match for it, you know. So I thought that was really really strong, really, really powerful. And, you know, it was pretty dark for a long time, but, I think it's a very hopeful kind of conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is, another one that I liked a lot.
Yeah. And I, you know, I just said about, the Bandits of Golak, like, I was like, oh, I love that it has so many different elements of Star Wars, you know, the lightsabers and all that. I like that this one doesn't. I like that this one is a much more focused story where it's just like, we're just going to tell, you know, the story of these oppressed people and the way people came together to, you know, kind of overpower the Empire and use their collective, you know, voices and power to overcome oppression. I thought that was really great. And I'm glad that it didn't have any lightsabers or, you know, too many other kind of elements of Star Wars, and that it just it focused on its ideas more so.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also just like a really good concept. Like, it's like just the, you know, the one sentence pitch is really good for this one. And I always appreciate a good concept that's followed through well.
Okay, last one here is Awa's song. This is from Triggerfish Studios, produced in South Africa. I swear I thought Triggerfish was a studio that we heard about before.
that's Trigger.
Oh, Trigger, not Triggerfish.
Yeah, that's okay. a Japanese animation studio.
I was going to say, like, I know they were involved in Volume 1, but that's Trigger, not Triggerfish. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Awa's song.
So, okay, so about Triggerfish. I was looking into them, and they have, they made a movie that, called Seal Team, and, it is, the story of a group of misfit Cape Fur seals who come together to fight a gang of ruthless sharks. And it is like SEAL Team, like a military group, but it's seals, like the animal seals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understood that pretty quickly once you said it was about seals fighting sharks. So, yeah.
Yeah. I really like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You haven't watched it yet, though.
No, I'm not going to. But like, I like the concept. It's like, it's really clever. Like, hats off to them for SEAL Team.
Okay, all right.
A movie about elite seals doing battle. Yeah, I like it.
Well, you know, I haven't seen that. It certainly sounds fun. And based on, you know, this short Awa's song, I would be open to checking it out because I thought this one was also so excellent. Right. And so, I think the producers of this, project Visions, like, they really killed it. I don't know if we've talked about that or not, but like, they have done such an excellent job of, you know, shepherding this project through and kind of finding the right studios to work with. Many of the behind the scenes, little documentaries for Volume 2 here, the writers and directors and studio creatives talked about how the producers at Lucasfilm were really encouraging them to kind of make it personal and find their own, you know, kind of voice and tell their own kind of Star Wars story. And I think, like, you see that so much in all of these shorts. And so, like, as we're wrapping up talking about Visions Volume 2, they really just did such a strong job of that, I feel like. And this is another example, because this one is beautiful and sweet and fun and, a really unique Star Wars story. Not that the story itself is necessarily that unique, but just the presentation of it and the look and the feel is really great. So anyway, Awa song, another standout, directed and written by Nadia Dairies and Daniel Clark, again, a South African company. So, this also features Kyber Crystals and, this young, girl, Awa, who's climbing these mountains and lives with her father. And man, it's like, I don't know if this is reflected in the geography of South Africa or not, but like it was some death defying and kind of like, and there was moments when I was watching this one where I was nervous, like you should not be like hopping from one like ledge to another like this, like you're gonna fall, like this is scary. But anyways, it's like kind of idyllic in some ways, like you know, just kind of like bouncy fun existence for her. But then there's also this element of her father warning her about things, and like, you know, there's another kind of side to that, I guess, as well. But anyway, it's it focuses around these kyber crystals, and the choice that she has to make around that. And you know, eventually it does conclude with her also having to make the choice to go off with a family friend, someone who comes because Awa and her father mine these kyber crystals. And then they have a friend or like an associate who comes to their planet every once in a while and seems kind of Jedi-y, right? Like speaks in sort of like a wise sort of mystical kind of way, and wants these kyber crystals. And by the end, that's when it's kind of revealed that I was going to go off with her and do the Jedi thing, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do want to just start by talking about the visual style here. Mm-hmm. To me, it reminded me a lot of the Goodfeel games that were made for on Nintendo platforms, like Kirby's Epic Yarn, Yoshi's Woolly World, those games that have that like very like clothy feel to them, and it's like sort of like stop motion-y, but you know, there's also something I really appreciate. There's like a very like pleasant filter over everything, so it doesn't look like just super like gaudy CG at any point. Like it's just it like in the filter helps like with the texture of everything, so it's just a really nice visual style, and it's completely different than anything else we've seen in Visions or in Star Wars. And even like the character designs are like, I mean, they probably have a name on Wikipedia, but like I don't know what exactly like her and her dad are.
Yeah,
like they're just characters.
Well, the planet is called Korba, and apparently they are Korbin, but okay, yeah, I would assume that's created for this short. Just real quick on the look of it, it's been a few weeks since I've watched behind the scenes, but I remember that they created like actual physical puppets or models of these characters.
Oh, nice.
And they were talking a lot about like the materials they used to kind of get the right look and texture and all that. But then I don't actually know what I don't remember, or I'm not sure if it really, the documentaries are usually pretty quick, like 8 or 9 minutes long, you know? So they don't really go into the technical side of how these things are produced, but like they look fantastic. So I don't know if they were photographed and then they kind of created like 3D renders of them based off the photographs, or like, I don't know what they do technology wise. Like it's not stop motion, I don't think. It's computer generated, but they had these really great high quality, you know, sort of puppets or models that they created as well. So yeah, it was a very impressive look, and also just like kind of seeing it come together, you know, kind of emphasized how much care went into the design of these characters and how great they do look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would also say too, one other thing that kind of stood out to me about this one is that, it was almost like a High Republic type thing where Awa here, she kind of finds her power and her unique, voice, you know, because she like sings with the kyber crystal, right? Like, and so like in the High Republic, there's a lot of emphasis on every Jedi kind of sees the Force, interacts with the Force,
yeah,
and has like their own sort of, you know, special way of connecting with the Force. And so I thought that was a highlight of this episode as well. And there's a beautiful sequence, maybe, you know, 2/3 of the way through, where when she falls down into that like sort of danger, like she falls way down into that mine or part of that mountain or cave or whatever. And she starts singing and it's like very metaphysical and really spiritual and, just a really, really striking, sequence within, this short. But, yeah, just another example of like kind of, a character finding their voice, following the light, you know, whatever it is, but it's a kind of this sort of reoccurring idea in these shorts, like we were talking about earlier.
Now that you mention it, that is kind of a common thread through these episodes, an additional common thread. You know, it is that like High Republic idea of Jedi, you know, viewing, interacting with the Force in different ways, because we've kind of seen that in here, in these episodes. We've seen it with like painting and with dancing, and then like here singing. Yeah, that is just another interesting commonality across them, I guess. But it does.
And I think it mirrors too, like the actual production of these things, you know, like I was saying before, Lucasfilm sounds like they really want, you know, like part of the whole, really the kind of purpose of Visions or the idea behind Visions is to find these different studios and have them tell their story, or like their Star Wars story, and put their own unique kind of perspective and spin on it so that they all do feel very different, rather than like, hey, we want to bring you into Star Wars and have you do the Star Wars thing. More like they have to do with movies probably, right? Or like big budget like projects, like,
yeah,
you know, we're going to bring Taika Waititi in and have him do a Star Wars movie. And we want some Taika flavor in there, but it still needs to like fit the Star Wars style guide, right? But these don't even really have to fit the Star Wars style guide. No. They can be anything they want. Yeah. Sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
No. I mean, I think that's what's great about these. And I think like specifically about this one, you know, it kind of ends with the reoccurring theme we've seen across so many of these of like someone going off to do, you know, leaving their comfortable place, starting their hero's journey, you know, going on to bigger things. But like talking about Star Wars Visions on like a meta level, like I think it's, you know, I think volume one was like super effective in, you know, having the different Japanese studios, the different anime studios, approach Star Wars, because like, I think, you know, sometimes anime gets kind of like lumped in this thing of like, oh, that's just anime and all anime is the same. But as you can see from, you know, you look at the differences between the stories in Visions Volume 1, it's like, whoa, there's actually like, you know, a lot of difference between these different studios and their approaches. And then you also like factor in like the Ghibli Grogu short, and it's like, yeah, anime can be like a whole lot of things. But that's, you know, now they've kind of expanded it to animation, and like there's so many different styles of animation, and like you could you know, just say, oh, it's cartoons, but like, hey, look at how different all of these cartoons are. And then you also factor in like the cultural differences and how like the, you know, the creators are bringing in parts of like their culture, you know, where they're from, into it as well. And then like you also have, you know, the idea of like these being like personal stories. And so then like every person, even within a culture, is going to have like a different story and approach. And like, to me, like this just seems like, I don't think there's been any announcement of or confirmation of a Visions 3. Maybe there has been, I can't actually remember, but it does seem like this is something you could do infinitely. And like, you could just keep doing it. And I think like Visions 1 probably opened up some people's eyes who are working in animation to being like, hey, I have some ideas for this. And then, like, I think this one, even, like, furthermore, is going to, you know, give people ideas and, you know, pitches to Lucasfilm. And, you know, the people at the producers at Lucasfilm have a really good eye for talent within the animation studio. So hopefully they've been, you know, continuing to investigate and find great studios to work on this. But it does kind of go back to like what we were talking about earlier with like the video games. It's like, why not have, you know, like an initiative in Lucasfilm Gaming where you reach out to like indie studios and be like, hey, what would your dream Star Wars game be? You know, you reach out to, you know, the studios who, you know, have made stuff, you know, any of the indie games of recent memory, you know, Stardew Valley, what would their take on Star Wars be? Like, if they were interested in doing such a thing. But, you know, Hades and all of these, you know, different studios out there, like, it would be cool to get, like, you know, a visions for gaming. And, you know, it kind of already happens within on the Star Wars, like, literature side of things. Like, you have these very different comics that come out in graphic novels, and you have, like, these kind of book compilations where you have like 30 different authors telling like a short Star Wars tale. Like, yeah, let's expand this to this approach to video games. Get developers from all over the world making their like small Star Wars game. That would be really cool. But also, unrelated to that, like, I do hope that Visions continues. I hope this is a successful project for them, because it is, like, it does seem like it's kind of something that's, like, isolated in the, like, hardcore Star Wars fan base. Like, I don't know if, you know, the people who are watching Mandalorian are also watching Visions, like, at all.
Yeah.
But you know, I hope that it is like successful enough that they can keep doing it. Cause to me, like, this is more interesting, to me than like doing like another season of like Clone Wars or, the kind of like familiar, stuff that we get from Lucasfilm Animation. Like, this kind of stuff does like excite me, a bit more. So I do hope that this is, you know, successful in a way that it's sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they would do this necessarily instead of something like Clone Wars. Although it is interesting, the future of Star Wars animation, because we know Bad Batch season three is on the way, and that's the final season of the Bad Batch. So, yeah, I'm really curious to see what'll happen with, the future of Star Wars animation from there. I think Dave Filoni is a little too busy to be super involved with that. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point. So, you know, he created, co-created, I guess, the Bad Batch. So he was involved there, but I don't think he's working on it, too closely otherwise. But so, yeah, it kind of feels like a end of an era as far as Star Wars animation mm-hmm. is concerned, most likely. But I think hopefully there will be more Star Wars, animation, like long form or I guess episodic, whatever, more traditional mm-hmm. Star Wars animation shows in the future. I think there will be, but, you know, it doesn't have to be at the expense of Visions either. And I think Visions is, I have no idea, you know, how well it's doing. I think that might be one of the things that is going on with the writer strike as well, is like wanting a little more transparency from the streaming companies about how shows are performing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't know how it's doing, but the banner is pretty consistently there on Disney Plus. Like when you open up Disney Plus, like I see it on that splash screen, you know, pretty mm-hmm. frequently. Maybe in a way that I didn't with Willow after like a certain amount of time, you know, like it seems like it's still there. I guess it's only been you know, a month and a half since it came out.
It is the most recent Star Wars thing on there. Yeah. So, like, I think it is going to hang out at the top.
Yeah, I guess that's
for true. Now, but I guess we'll see, like, once other stuff comes out. But I don't know. Like, anyone I know who actually sits down and watches Visions loves Visions, both Volume 1 and Volume 2. But I do worry that, like, not people aren't, you know, engaging with it. I think there's, like, some a type of Star Wars fan that, like, wouldn't because it is, like, not quote-unquote canon or whatever. And then I think, you know, it may be, you know, there's also Star Wars fans who just don't watch the animation in general. Yeah. And then there's Star Wars fans who are, like, only watch the animation that's, like, the quote-unquote canon. So I don't know. But I do see, like, yeah, anyone who's watched it, I have not heard a single bad thing from. And, like, people who I know who watch Star Wars stuff can be, like, pretty critical of things. And even stuff that, like, I really like, I see a lot of criticism of. Like, Visions, like, nothing. Like, people watch it and they like it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, encourage your friends and family to watch Star Wars Visions, I guess.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I certainly echo your hope that a third season is on the way. I feel pretty confident that, well, I shouldn't say that. I guess I'm pretty positive about the fact that it very well could be, hopefully, and hopefully is on the way. So, yeah. But Ryan, let's wrap up the show here. We'll be back soon. I'm not going to commit to a specific date, but it'll be pretty soon. And, you know, we've got a little bit of time. One of the things that happened in the world of Star Wars since our last episode is another Ahsoka trailer came out, and the marketing push for Ahsoka is starting to happen. So it won't be too long before, you know, kind of our show here, Blockade Runner, turns its attention back to, you know, a weekly Star Wars television show. But I would love to do some more just kind of like, I don't know, pick a topic, kind of episodes for the summer here, for our next few before Ahsoka really ramps up. So, you know, I have some ideas. I'm sure you'll have some ideas about some things we can discuss here in the next few episodes before it becomes Ahsoka season. Mm-hmm. And I'm not rushing towards Ahsoka season because that's like me going back to school season too. So I'm going to try to enjoy the summer here, and we can do some episodes that are focused on some different Star Wars topics. But yeah, until then, you can find all the shows that we do at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. And if you'd like to message the show, you can email us at blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can follow the show on Twitter. The show's Twitter handle is @blockaderun. Ryan, you're on Twitter at?
Via Malay and Standard Definition Gaming.
All right, very good. And of course, we do have our Discord happening as well. So if you want to be involved in kind of more daily discussions and chats with us and some of our listeners, join our Discord, and the link to that will be in the show notes and is up on the blog as well. So until the next episode, thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.